We are here this evening, and as I said, this evening we continue the talks we have been giving here. This is a talk that began in Christ, a serious teaching about the fact that one day God will call a person to account for something that was entrusted to him and that he failed to cultivate as he should have. You know, every one of us has received mercy from my God. Yet some people carry a Luciferian pride because they do not attribute what they have to God, but to themselves, to their own shrewdness, to their own cleverness. A person, if he is not favored by God, is nothing at all. He is a joke. Whatever you have, man, you have from God. The Apostle Paul grasped this very well. That is why in his letter to the Corinthians he says to man, "Man, what do you have that you did not receive? You do not have it on loan. No one is taking it back from you. So what is it that you have? Knowledge, beauty, stature, money. What is it that you have of your own? You hear, and it is his. You see, and it is his. You feel, and it is his. What do you have that you did not receive? And since he says you received everything you have, why do you boast as though you had not received it? Why do you say, 'These things are mine'? You have everything from God." Every human being has been brought into existence by God. If we exist, if we have come into this life, it is because God willed it. It is not simply because my father and mother wanted it, but because God willed it. How many people long to have a child? Let a person put the question to himself like this, that he happened to be born into a good environment, that he happened to find himself in a home with a certain amount of material comfort, money and so on, and more than that, with a mind that turns quickly and never tires of reading, of learning, of knowing, of making and building things, and with a fine bearing, with good looks, with gifts, with a voice like a nightingale, and all the rest. How did all this come about? Did it happen in 2 or 4 minutes? Everything comes from above. Of ourselves we have nothing at all, and if only a person would come to think this way and be humbled and say, "My God, do not take this from me. My God, do not let me be left without means. My God, do not let me be left without good people around me. My God, do not let me lose my sight. My God, do not take my hearing from me. My God, do not take my sense of taste. My God, do not let this happen to me." This is the point a person needs to reach, because if he does not say this, then deep down every man is an egoist. Everything he has gained is his own. He says he arranged it, he built it, I was clever, I worked, I made it, nothing of the sort. How could it be? He is the giver of gifts, he gave them, and he gave them freely, without our paying anything, he took nothing from anyone. Now, of course, people say he did not distribute the way a man would, he distributed as God. But tell me, if you put a man in charge of distributing, would he distribute rightly? He would not. God distributes rightly because he alone knows how much each person can carry. If it were left to human beings, they would make everyone rich. That is to say, they would make everyone miserable. When all people become rich, then everyone is wretched. Such an arrangement would create a situation where no one would work at all and we would die on the spot. God has made no mistakes. God is all-wise. It is we who are ungrateful and careless. Because think how many people work, let's say, at secondary jobs, at lesser trades, the kind of work we look down on, the kind we wouldn't want our own child to do, and so on. And yet you need that very person, the one your child does not want to become. Would you want your son to become a carpenter? Is my son going to become a carpenter? Then how badly do you want a carpenter to come and build something for you? Why should someone else's child become a laborer, but not my own child? Why? How can a person think that way? He wants his son to become a milkman. Am I to make my son a milkman? Then why should someone else's child become a milkman, producing the milk up there whenever I want it? Or tending cattle down there, tending sheep, going out to dig or to thresh and so on. Who are you and who am I that other people's children should become servants to me and to my own children? If only man would reflect, if only he would reflect on God's all-wise providence and love. And God's providence has arranged things so that each one completes the other. The wise man is needed. The scientist is needed. The inventor is needed. the manual laborer is needed. Are they not all needed? Otherwise nothing would fit together. You know this. Look, study this thing with five fingers on it. Your hand, what do you see? One is tall, one a little longer, one a little thicker, a little longer, a little thicker. This one's like this, that one like that. Five fingers, five things that are not alike. Now, bring them together and look at what they are. Look at what they can do. If they were not unlike each other, would they ever make such harmony? Take off your shoe and look at your feet. Look at your feet. Look at your toes. How they are. Should they all be made the same? Then tell me, could we even walk? These are material matters I am speaking about, not spiritual ones yet. A little patience, because, you know, the child does not take to his books. He does not do this. He does not do that. And yet not all those who have risen high in the world's eyes were shining lights at school. What difference does it make whether he gets 20 out of 20, or 19, or 18, or 17, or 15, or 10? Knowledge is not measured by that kind of weight. Within the small measure of knowledge he has, within those few turns his mind can make, because, you see, he did not go out and buy his brain, he did not pick it off a shelf. It was given to him as a gift. God gave him that. That is, provided you, the mother and the father, did not rob him of it through some filthiness of your own, because very often it is the parents who are the cause of pathological conditions in their children. So if you have had no part in it, then leave the child where God has placed him. Leave the one with one talent to his one talent. The one to whom he gave two, leave him with the two. The one to whom he gave five, leave him with the five. Did you give these things, or did God give them? And when God gives, he knows how much each one can carry, according to the strength of each. Take an example. Let's say you have five little children, God bless them, and the two of you have to go out to the market. So we go down to the farmer's market and you do your shopping. Now you're going to load up the children so that everything gets carried back home. Will you load more onto the little one and less onto the older one? Or will you load each one in proportion to his age and his strength? The little one, at most you put an orange in his hands to carry, and that is all. To one child you'll give the bigger things, to another more than that, to another more still, and the heaviest part you'll carry yourself, so that you can all get home. And you'll load each child, that is, you'll entrust to each child in proportion to the strength that child has. Well now, do you think this all-wise God does not do it well? That he does not give to each one in proportion, according to how much each one can bear? He who foresees everything, who knows before a person is even born what each one will be, what capacity they will have, how much courage they will have, how much they will be willing to work, how much they will be able to endure, does he not know how much he ought to offer, how much to give to each one? God gave us a child to be a carpenter, and we are determined to make him a civil engineer. God gave us a child to become a saint, and we want to turn him into a moneymaker down here. Those are our own blunders. It is not that God made a mistake and gave us only so much, a certain amount of knowledge, a certain strength, a certain sharpness of mind, whatever it may be. No, the trouble is that we never ask what this child can actually become, because we have it fixed in our minds that a child can only become somebody, can only live like a human being if he manages to climb, to collect 1, 2, 3 degrees and so on, to fill his head with knowledge, to make money and the rest of it. We say, he knows how to live and he has succeeded. That is the mistake. What will fill his head and what will fill his heart? Many children have heads full of knowledge. They earn money and arrange all sorts of material things, yet their hearts are empty. And when the heart is empty, they are beasts. So be on your guard against educated people who have no God. Because a bad man who is unlettered is simply bad. An educated bad man is a wild beast, and God gives to each one. So stand in the place where God stationed you, in the place where God put you, and you will succeed there where God put you. We venerate the patriarchs. We call upon their intercessions. We pray that we may go to the bosom of Abraham, of Isaac, of Jacob. What were they? Were they doctors? Did they fly into space? Were they inventors? Were they scientists? Did they know how to say thank you? Did they say merci and excuse me, pardon, oxen, goats, sheep? That is what these men had. God counted them worthy to enter paradise and to be held in such blessedness there that we now pray to go to the bosom of Abraham, of Isaac, and of Jacob. And what was God? What was Christ? A carpenter. Which lady today wants her child to become a carpenter? What was Paul? Do you know what kind of man this Paul was? He was a university in motion, a giant of learning. Not only biblical learning, but philosophical learning as well. When Paul came here to Athens, he demonstrated that our Christ is God by drawing on our own philosophers and poets. He took our own writings, and from them he proved to them that Christ is eternal. Go and read the 17th chapter of the Acts of the Apostles. You never open the Holy Gospel, and you call yourselves Orthodox Christians. You will not open it. You will not read it. You will not read how we here came to have Christianity, how Paul brought it to Athens. It is there in the Acts of the Apostles. Read it for yourselves. Holy Scripture itself tells you everything I am telling you. So this man made tents. Tents is what he made. Paul was a tent maker. It is not the learning. It is not the job. It is not the trade that gives a person their worth. And the parts we consider least honorable receive greater honor and adornment. You have read Paul on this. The members of the body that seem lowly, the ones we hide away that one holds the first place, it holds the first place. It is counted the least honorable, and precisely for that reason we treat it with greater care, and it is given the most honorable position. That one goes first, and only afterwards comes the master of the house. Open a tap and shut it again 2 minutes later. Things do not come in the order we arrange for them. They come in another order altogether. But people have never stopped to think it through, that all these matters we talk about day and night are supposed to make a person, to present him as great and educated and accomplished and all the rest of it. Therein lies the essence. The weight of the matter, the center of it, lies in the soul of a person and in the forming of that person's soul. That is the secret. Every human being is useful, and Christ does not look at them as professions. He does not look at them as tradesmen. He does not look at them as, I don't know, scientists. He looks at them as human beings with souls, and he looks at their soul. Not at their wallet, not at their brain, not at their house, not at their diplomas. None of that counts with him. He looks at their hearts, at their souls. That is why in the Old Testament he says, My son, give me your heart from you. He says, My child, I want your heart. He asks for nothing else. Why? Because God dwells only in the heart of a person. He does not dwell in a person's mind, but in the heart. The fathers say, as we have said on other occasions, that the nous, the spiritual intellect, is the bought servant of the heart. The nous works according to the condition of the heart. If the heart is good, the nous is good and it works what is good. The cleverer you are, the more inventive you will be in good things. But if the heart is cunning, then the nous is a double-edged knife. The nous turns cunning, and then guard yourself from an educated atheist. Guard yourself. A few days ago, we were reading in the newspaper how a young gentleman, a university student, threw his girlfriend, a fellow student, out of the window. Education without God is a terrible beast, a double-edged knife. If ignorance cuts on one side only, this is a two-edged sword, and it cuts this way and that way in every way, a two-edged sword wherever there is education without God. So what matters is the human heart, not who I am, what position I hold, or saying, Do you know who I am? Do you know what family I come from? Do you know who my father is? Do you know who I am? I know nothing about any of that, nor do I want to know. What I want to know is my relationship with Christ. Do you have humility? Do you accept that whatever you have, you did not receive it so that you could set yourself above the next person and lift your nose in the air? No, because the gate of death makes it plain that none of these things pass through with us. Years ago, I was coming down from Psychico, riding the bus, and an argument broke out between the conductor and one of the passengers. An old grandmother had got on, handed over a 5-drachma coin, and was asking for change for 100. A commotion started. Then somebody spoke up and came down hard on the poor conductor. The man had seen what happened, and he says, "Sir, what are you saying to me? I did not see what she gave me. I cannot see what I have in my hand. This is what she handed me. And how do you know what sort of man I am? Where do you know me from? Where did you ever see me? Please sit down in your seat." And off he goes again and again. "Do you know who I am?" The man wouldn't answer him. "What I'm asking you," he says, "is do you know who I am?" The conductor still wouldn't answer him. "I'm talking to you," he says. "Do you know who I am and who you're talking to?" So the man answers him and says, "What, am I a cemetery," he says, "that I should know who you are?" The man was left standing there stunned. "Why are you shaking your finger at me? You will go and have me transferred, have me punished. When you go down into the ground, then I will tell you who you are. Am I supposed to know who you are?" Things eased off a bit. But look at what went through this person's mind. Just like that, the moment this poor soul made the threat, the thought came to the other one, "Who are you and who am I? Who are you?" And in the end, dust. So this is something that should never cross a Christian's mind, and unfortunately it does. Every mother has her own private God where her children are concerned. She sees them differently. She sees them as clever. She already knows how they will turn out, and so on. She never stops to ask whether that cleverness in the child will come out for good or for evil. She should say, "My God, do not take from him this gift that God gave him. God is, if you like, a man with a screwdriver. What do you people call them? God has screwdrivers, and he can turn a little screw just a fraction, and then we shall see. You should receive what you have as coming from God, and thank God for it, and be afraid of losing it. That talent God gave you, leave it in God's hands together with all his gifts. My God, help him and help us to guard it, so that it does no damage, so that it does not go off into the ravines of Satan." People sometimes talk to me about my own boy. Forgive me, I'm going to speak about my own family for a moment. They say he is doing well, and so on. Yes, of course, but do not talk to me that way, because I shudder. He has the foundation. He has the power. He has an enormous memory. But where is he going to turn that knowledge? Toward the good, toward the glory of God. Or if he turns to the left, he will become an Arius. He has it in him to become another Arius. That is a terror to me, a fear day and night. I have to be worn raw with lumps on my head and on my hands and on my feet, begging God to throw that power over to the right. Only let it not go off into the ravines of Satan. And I plead with him and say, "You gave it to him. I beg you, take it back from him. Make him a simpleton, so long as his soul is saved. Because if not, what will become of him? Yet there are people who are flattered by it all. You know my degree, you know who I am, my car, my house, my boots come first in everything. Man, the more God has given you and the better he has placed you in this world, and the more knowledge and strength and wisdom he has given you compared with the next person, the more carefully you should use it in love." You should picture it like this. If you have been placed high up, you must come down and fill in someone who is lower. If there's a mountain, then somewhere there's a valley. That mountain has to be cut down and dropped into the valley, so the ground comes out level. Every valley shall be filled. Read the passage about John the Forerunner. Everything is to be leveled, the valleys filled in, and every mountain cut down. We are somebody, and you are not. This is mine. I am worn out saying it. In most people there is not so much as a word of thanks turned toward God, and God does not want it this way. Ingratitude, my beloved, is the sin that God cannot bear. Do you remember how he complained the other day when we read about the lepers? When 10 of them were cleansed, and he asked, "Where are the 9? Not one was found, he says, to give glory to God. "I was asking nothing for myself," he says. "Let him at least give glory to God. How do we treat a man who has done us a kindness, and he had worked that miracle? And even so, a man forgets and counts everything as his own, as we often say, it is not yours and it is not mine, it is his. We are only stewards here, so let each one look at himself and see where he stands. Let him give it all back to God, and let him be careful, because God will ask him for an account one day. Here we are like merchants. God has handed us a sum of money, a capital to trade with. We came into this world as a little piece of flesh, and then, when we grew up, we turned up with knowledge, with learning, with strength, with discernment, with this and with that, and with one thing after another. Who put all these other things into that little piece of flesh? God put them there. So for everything He has given us, He will ask us to give an account. How did you use it? Not one of us had anything of his own. Each of us came from non-being into being, out of nothing into existence. We did not come here simply because our mother and our father sent us. We came because God sent us as well. A human being. Because if there were no law that when the ovum unites with the man's sperm, a human being comes to be, we would not have come into existence here, we would not be. So it is not the will of the father nor of the mother, it is God's will too. And in this, the human being is a co-worker with God, and that is a great honor for him. I said it, he did not distribute unfairly the way a man would. He distributed as God does to each one. To one he gave one talent, to another he gave two talents, to another he gave five talents. It is better for a person to work with what he has been given, because God will turn and ask him for an account. What did you do with it? I gave you a voice, because someone else has no voice, and if he opens his mouth to chant or to sing, you would think a crow had opened its beak. And when the other one opens his mouth, you'd think you were listening to a nightingale. So what is going on here? Is it all a joke? Where do we find paradise? Where did that man get his voice? Did he buy it at the market? How is it that in a lesson one child learns it right there and doesn't even need to go home and study, while with another one you break your head for 3 or 4 hours just to get a single word into his mind? How did this come about? To this one he gave the one talent. To that one he gave more. So it was the one who knows who shared them out. He knew how he shared them out. Now you see to it that you trade with what he gave you. Do it beautifully, do it well, for the glory of God and for the service of your neighbor. Not for yourself. If you're going to use what God gave you only for yourself, then you're like that servant who took the talent and went and hid it in the ground. Because there are people, sadly, among us who see nothing beyond their own flesh, nothing beyond this filthy clay, how to feed that flesh, how to pamper it, how to satisfy its fleshly appetites, and beyond that, nothing in the world. There are people to whom God gave many gifts and abilities, and they had no wish to use them. And then there are the people who took what God gave them and put it to use. Someone will say, "Will you name for us some of these talents that God has given to people?" Let me tell you, the first talent He gave to every human being is life. Is it a small thing for a person to be alive? Is life a small thing? And not just life, immortal life, life that is not snuffed out, that does not vanish, that is not brought to nothing. Do you know where life begins and then never ends? From the moment conception takes place within the mother's womb. From that moment we have life in a condition that keeps unfolding. And if that life is not there, the mother's womb will cast out what it holds. The talent to the human being, and that is why he has also attached a tip to it, a little bonus, as we say. For a human being to be born takes labor, and so does keeping him alive and raising him. And in the same way, keeping a person alive takes care. He cannot feed himself any way he likes and eat whatever he likes. God placed taste there so that you have time to notice if something is bitter, so you don't eat it and die. He placed smell right above it, so that whatever goes inside passes a check first. Because it is precious in your life, and so that you look after this body, feed it and cherish it in due measure, so that it can carry out its purposes, the sustaining of the soul, the sanctification of the soul and childbearing, bringing others into being. There is another bonus, taste. Many people would not even eat if taste did not exist. Taste is a tip. But the point is not that you eat in order to taste. He gives you a tip because you eat and keep yourself alive, and that is needed for a reason. The tip for childbearing is pleasure, as you know. A person receives his tip as well, pleasure, on condition that he brings a human being into existence. But we have altered this arrangement. We take the tip without doing the work. It's a natural thing, they say. And it is today's young people above all who say it. Young people who are led and dragged about worse than dogs in the street. It's natural, they say. God made woman and man. I have no objection to that. Thank you for admitting that it was God who made man and woman. But why did he make them? So that they could enjoy pleasure. Is that what he said? He said increase and multiply, didn't he? You are a young student. We were speaking with a student. And from what we hear, you have been living in fornication for 15 or 20 years. Where are your children? Where is your childbearing? Do you fornicate in order to have children? That is not why you do it. You fornicate in order to take the tip, the pleasure, and the children you kill, you throw away. The point is not simply to eat, but to work and then eat, not to steal. Because it is natural to eat, work, labor, grow tired, and then eat. Why shouldn't you eat? When God made the woman and the man, did he not tell them to go and have children? He blessed them and said, increase and multiply. That is the purpose for which I made you woman for the man. He blessed them and told them, go, increase and multiply. So go ahead, you too, take your wife, come and let God bless you in his church. And go and have children. Nobody is taking the wife away from the husband, or the husband away from the wife. But the way you put it, that I will only collect the tip and never do the work, never get tired, never bring children into the world, that God does not accept. And however much you fool yourself and fool everyone else today, you will not be able to fool them then on that day. Some parents do not feel it as an honor to become co-workers with God. And yet it is a great honor for you, my friend, to bring human beings into existence. A man is considered successful and wise and someone who knows how to manage his affairs when he invests his sweat or what he has stolen in a few properties, in gold, in bonds, in whatever it is. He is considered wise because he knows how to arrange things, but the greater wisdom and the most trustworthy investment of all is childbearing. Children are a 100% investment, one that does not collapse with war or with plague or with earthquake. It does not collapse with anything at all. Why? Because the soul endures even beyond the grave. The soul endures even beyond the grave. And Solomon writes, I do not know whether you read his Proverbs, he says in one place. He who saves souls is wise. Why? Because the soul remains even beyond the grave. Everything else will stay behind here. The soul remains for eternity. So to bring children into the world, to give birth to children is an investment. You're making images of God, but we will become poor. That plays no part at all. Is it only the poor who avoid childbearing? The rich who could feed whole communities, who could feed entire villages, do not have even one. Did you see the man they wrote about in the paper the other day, today, the one who was slaughtered? Where is his family now? Where is his property? Where is his wife? Where are his children? Where are all the things you left behind? And if it is true that he was living a double life, then the whole thing will end in weeping. It is not a question of not having the means, because most of us come from large families and we know that perhaps we suffered in one way or another. Yet we survived. And we built houses, and we built up property, and we took our positions in life. And today we have enough for 10 children. But our investments go into cars. They go into antennas. We put horns on the house. We install a television. We fit the place out with our own washing machines and kitchens. Nowadays we even sweep the floor with electric machines and so on. It's these children, the ones thrown away in the trash can. These are the children. One day God will ask us to give an account. What did you do with the talent I gave you? How did you use it? Why were you unwilling to become my partner? You hear it said that the world will become overpopulated, and so on and so forth. Greece could still support another 20 million. Everything is left uncultivated, everything has been left deserted. Olive trees stand unharvested. Olives and there are no hands to gather them. Everything deserted. The villages emptied out. Everything emptied out. Greece could still support another 15 million people. Where are our resources? How many people are down in Africa and elsewhere, where there is room for human beings to be planted, and the land lies deserted? Lions and snakes roam about there. And then people come and tell you to avoid childbearing because the system promotes it. And yet some of the very people who preach this have children themselves in their own families. This does not happen. They do not kill their own children, what they preach here. They themselves do not practice 100 meters away. Some preach corruption and nakedness while keeping their own wives and daughters covered. And now we ourselves, the Orthodox, the Christians, consider it progress. This is a 100% denial of God, and this talent of motherhood, of fatherhood, we have thrown back in his face. Take it back, we say, we do not want it. And he will ask for an account, if only I could bring you into one thought. When we find ourselves beyond the grave, all those people who killed their children in cold blood, or avoided them, and through this life carried in the seed into the rubbish bins, lives thrown away, that is what they are. I do not know whether you have ever read in Genesis about Onan. Why was Onan put to death? Because he spilled his seed. He did not allow it to take root within the woman, so that from that seed a human being might come into this life. Because he threw away his seed, Onan, and from him we get the word Onanism. They put him to death. God gave the command that he be stoned. I want you to read these things and to know them. So then all those children, the ones who in one way or another were killed and never came into existence, their souls are there. They exist. They are lives that truly exist. And when we cross over to the other side, all those mothers who did this and the fathers too, we will find these little souls like little lambs. Have you ever been to a village where there is a sheepfold? The sheep are out grazing, and meanwhile the lambs are kept inside the pen. And they bleat and make a great commotion, waiting. That is how these children, these little lambs, will cry out. They will whimper against us. And what will they say? Do you know what they will say? Murderous mother, what did I ever do to you? How did I wrong you? What did you find in me that was so bad that you killed me? Why did you kill me? In any case, one way or the other, you will be judged as a murderer. So why did you not let me be born and have me baptized so that I too could go to paradise and then kill me if you wished? Either way, you are a murderer. Why do you deprive me of paradise so that I come here unbaptized and sit like this for all eternity? All, so that her figure wouldn't be ruined. That's what lies behind it, unbelief in God. And the child will say the very same thing to that butcher of a doctor, the one who laid a hand on the gospel and said, I swear to uphold life. And now, for a few thousand drachmas, he puts that life to death in cold blood. Here, once I was speaking in Patesia, on a street called Kaftansoglu, I think. As I was passing by, there was a house on the corner painted red, blood red, and it struck me as strange, so I asked, whose house is this? What got into his head? They told me, it belongs to a midwife. She built it. Well, I said, then she built it with blood, with the blood of the little ones, the blood of the children she has killed. That is what I said, and about 2 years later I happened to meet her. She was a real fury. She had grown savage from the killing she had done, from the abortions she had performed. Well, I do not know what came over me, but I spoke to her openly. I said, that bright red is a grave reproach to you, madam. She asked me, why? It reminds me of death, I said, of the blood of the children you are killing. But can anyone live differently today? She replied. How many women, she said to me, cannot bear to give birth? But if you people kill the children first, how is she ever going to carry one and bring it to birth? That woman went out of her mind. She lost her reason afterwards. I do not know if she is still alive. She ended up in the asylum. She went mad. She fell under demonic possession. Demonic possession. That is a terrible thing. There was also a doctor from Arta. I'm glad to tell you about this one. He used to travel to Italy. This was more than 10 years ago. I had written a book called A Deadly Sin, The Avoidance of Childbearing. And at that time I had obtained from the medical association here the names of all the obstetricians in Greece, and I sent a copy to every one of them. So many of them. I do not know how you all took it. This book reached him and he was reading it. Then the next day he was traveling by air. He came to Ioannina. He was in Arta and he was on his way to Italy. As he sat there in the aeroplane, sleep came over him and he dozed off. And there he sees small children, many of them, coming at him with spears to gouge out his eyes. He was struggling to drive them away, but he could not wake up. The man beside him noticed, a flight attendant noticed, that he was in some kind of distress. He was saying, "Drive them off, help me," and so on, but nothing. All the way until he reached Rome, he was in that agony. So when he got to Rome, he came to himself. They said to him, "Sir, what's wrong?" And he said, "Nothing, nothing, I'm fine, it's nothing." Anyway, he left. The result was that he changed professions. He went back and studied again, and now he's a doctor of internal medicine. He gave up his old job. Now, of course, if he has also made his confession, that will be good for the salvation of his soul. Unfortunately, my beloved, these are the things we do not think about, and we hide behind all sorts of excuses. "Well, you know, I am poor. Well, you know, I cannot manage. Well, you know, I had a cesarean. Well, you know this. Well, you know that." I know many things, but there is one thing I do not know, and that is what God thinks about all this. God, who gave man this opportunity to bring human beings into existence, to be himself a little God, and man takes that gift and throws it back in his face and says, "I will not do this thing." But consider another case as well. You are blocking the road of a human being who is on the way, whether it is a girl or a boy. And who is this person whose road you are blocking? Tell me, what if he is a scientist? What if he is a great inventor, a Fleming, for example? What if, let me say it, he is a saint? Do you have the right? Who are you? That for the sake of a few kernels of corn you block the road of this child? Who are you? Do lions do this? Does the tigress do this? Does the ape do this? The ape you boast you are descended from? Does any creature in nature kill its own child deliberately with premeditation? Who does that? Does the cat do it? Does the dog do it? Go and bother a kitten and it will scratch your eyes out, and yet man does this. Man does this. There are three or four Saint Catherines, counting the one of Mount Sinai. One of the other four was her mother's 25th child. Do you see? Just think about it. A dozen children, as people used to say, a dozen we've had now. And where do you think you're going, Sir Catherine? A second dozen, 24. A second dozen, she turned into a rabbit, if you like. She fulfilled her calling. And the 25th is Saint Catherine. And do you know what it means to be the mother of a saint? Ah, that is a great thing. A special order of angels and archangels will come to receive the soul of the mother and the father of a saint. A special order will come to receive the soul of the monk, the soul of the clergyman, the slandered clergyman who stood firm and kept his dignity, and so on. It is a great honor for the mother and for the father who give saints to the world. It is a great honor for the father and the mother who give an inventor, who give a scientist to this world. But the honor of those parents who give a saint, a monk, a clergyman, that honor is in heaven. The honor in heaven is a different matter. For example, if they are a Christian as well, that's a beautiful thing. Fleming gave penicillin to the human race, isn't that so? But remained heterodox, outside the Orthodox faith. One gave us this, another that they gave us the telephone, others the telegraph, great things, things that benefited us, but they remained far from our right faith. What would it be like if the two came together? And still I repeat, this talent that God gave to man, making him his fellow creator and permitting him so much, man does not value as he ought, and the results will be sorrowful. I wanted you to have that blessed place in eternity. Think of these three mothers we are honoring today, and above all Saint Amelia, the mother of Basil the Great, a saint, Saint Macrina, a saint, Saint Naucratius, her brother, a saint, Saint Gregory of Nyssa, a saint. Both parents were saints as well. So many holy people from a single family, great stars in heaven. And bear in mind that for the most part, this responsibility rests with the mother. There are also fathers who oppose her. For instance, I was speaking at a gathering a little earlier, before I came here. They handed me this clipping from the newspaper, and it says, he wanted to butcher his wife because she would not have an abortion. So we have brutes like that among the men as well. But most of the time, the beast is the mother. An even bigger beast is the mother's own mother, and the mother-in-law, she is a big beast too. A few days ago, there was a dream that went like this. A big snake was lying stretched out on the ground, and another little snake had come to rest on top of the big one. In that house the son had married, he had taken a girl of 18, married for love. The young girl got pregnant, but her own mother, over on the other side, that great beast, children already, at 18, and on, not before 25, back and forth, and the girl leaning on her mother, she had a forceful mother, in the end she killed the child in Messalonghi, just days ago. You understand. And the whole affair will probably end in divorce, because the husband insists, either this is settled in my house, or she goes back to her mother. I'm going to my mother, I'm going to her. That is the main and most serious issue, because younger women are shaken when they hear the more experienced women, the experienced ones. Do you know what medals hang around our necks, and what we shall find awaiting us on that day, when we ought instead to have encouraged them? God will provide my child. I have seen miracles in my life. We did not have the means that you have today. We wandered the streets half-starved and barefoot. Our parents had no way of feeding us, and so on. And so on. Yet God watched over us. Do not become murderers. Accept whatever God gives you. He knows better. Every child comes with its own calling. Every human being who comes here comes with a mission. Do not go against God, quarrel with people if you must, but never quarrel with God. Where are the mothers who will say such things? Where are the mothers-in-law who will say such things? Instead, the poor women drag it on for years, saying she is weak, she is inexperienced, and so on, and the slaughter goes on. God gave talents. And there are women to whom God did not give the talent of motherhood. He did not give it. It is God who must give it to you. Why does he withhold it? Simply because that is how he willed it. Are you not carrying out his mission when you are a mother? Is it not an honor to be a mother? Is there anything greater? For us to have a society, for us to have the church, for us to have saints, we need mothers. Motherhood is the most honorable thing there is, the most beautiful calling. The kingdom of the woman is in motherhood and in the home, and today the devil drags her out of that place, telling her she has no standing in society and all the rest of it. So I say, he has given something to each one, to one talent, to another, two, to another, more. There is no human being without some talent and some mission in the world. Some people say, I'm not sent for anything, I am nobody special. God will ask others. No, God will ask every one of us. God may not give you knowledge, he may not give you money, he may not give you cleverness or whatever else. But he gave you a heart, he gave you a soul. You have two hands while someone else has only one. You are duty-bound to help the one who has only one hand. You have two eyes while the other person has none. You are obliged to place your own talent, your sight, at his service in his need. That is how it is. You have found a way to earn 10, 15, or 20,000 a month while someone else earns 3. Take out 1 or 2,000 and give it to him. That is how it is. To one man God gave education, and he rose, and he ends up with a pension so big that he stands counting it for half an hour at the cashier's window. And the other poor soul receives 1,840, though he worked hard for 30 or 40 years to help you, laying the sewer so that your filth could pass away underneath. This is the word of God. If each person were willing to use his talents, his advantages, and the blessing God has given him in the right way, we would have a beautiful society, for the conclusion is this: God made people different so that they might complement one another. We do not only need masters, we also need helpers. We need the nurse. We need the washerwoman. We need the cleaner. He has a soul too. You see, we cannot get by with masters alone. What a wonderful arrangement it is. If only we would grasp it. So I thank God who arranged these things. Do you remember when I once spoke to you about this? For a single bullet, a single cartridge, to reach the front line, 15 people have to work for it to get there. One man mines the metal, another shapes it, another makes the casing, another the gunpowder, another fills it, another packs it, another loads it, another transports it, another 15 people. The same thing happens for us to eat one piece of fruit, for us to eat one slice of bread, one rusk, for us to eat a little cheese. How many people are working behind it all? People we do not even count as having a profession. Ah, the peasant, the villager. Do not look down on the villager. You who came to Athens, or I will tell you, civilized man, who you are and who I am. Our egotism will not let us see it. So each person has his own, exactly as God gave it to him. So take heed, because one day God will come and see. What did you do with the things I told you? What did you do with what I gave you? What did you do with the things I entrusted to you to use for my glory and for your own good? Because a day will come when he will settle accounts. It should be a joy, as the parable of the talents that we will hear on Sunday says, to come forward like the man who received five and to say to him, Lord, you gave me five, I have made another five. And like the other, Lord, you gave me two, I have made another two. May we hear those words that he says, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He said the same thing to the one who had been given two. But woe to the man who hid it in the ground. I hid it in the ground, he says. Here, take it back. People who see nothing beyond their own flesh, beyond their own precious little selves, beyond their own filth. They take no one else into account. What they will eat, what they will drink, how they will make themselves comfortable, they see nothing else. Don't expect anything good from people like that.